From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel with the final report in our American Stages series. Regional theaters have become a $1.4 billion industry. But some artists feel that the success of regional theater has come at too high a price. Bob Mondello reports on dissenting voices in the regional theater movement.
The inclusion of minorities is a long-standing mission of regional stages, but how groups get included varies. Non-traditional casting is one way, play selection is another, and some stages, like Plowshares Theater in Detroit, go further.
We are Michigan's only professional continuously producing African-American theater.
Gary Anderson, founder of Plowshares, where the current attraction is The Story, about a reporter who goes on the offensive when accused of fabricating sources.
I didn't grow up in middle-class black utopia, everybody singing songs and supporting one another. I got beat up for the very same things you got rewarded for.
That's your excuse? Bullies in the playground?
Plowshares is thriving now, but was less established in 1996 when the nation's most prominent African-American playwright said there were bullies in the nonprofit playground. August Wilson told a national theater forum that big theaters that used non-traditional casting, putting actors of color in traditionally white roles, were doing real damage.
You're utilizing black talent, and you're empowering black talent, if you will, at the expense of black people, at the expense of black theater.
Meaning that non-traditional casting was winning grants Wilson thought should be going directly to stages created by and for African Americans.
Some critics are writing and saying, well, since there are so many theaters which are doing black plays, is it necessary to have black theaters? You see, and what that does is it puts the custodianship of the art into someone else. And then what are blacks going to do 5 years from now when they're no longer doing black plays and when they're doing Asian plays or whatever? Whites still maintain control over those institutions, irrespective if you work in them or not.
Wilson got attention, but the situation got worse. Such black stages as Crossroads Theater in New Jersey, Freedom Theater in Philadelphia, and Atlanta's Jomandi Theater still exist, but Gary Anderson notes that they have stopped producing plays.
If this is a country in which self-expression and diversity is important, what does it say when we are not reflecting that in the marketplace of our art?
What it says is that priorities are being placed elsewhere, so black theaters stay small, even as their contributions loom large.
You would not have had a Morgan Freeman, a Denzel Washington, a Danny Glover, Don Cheadle, Sidney Poitier, Ossie Davis, Ruby Dee. I mean, you wouldn't have had those people had there not been African-American theaters for them to cut their teeth and get their talents cultivated and developed.
Black theaters have a rationale for grooming those artists, but Anderson understands why mainstream theaters might think they don't.
If I'm running the Arena Stage or the Goodman Theater, I have to decide how many times out of my season I'm not going to cast actors that look like the majority of my audience. And if I'm trying to please that audience with things that they have, through their attendance, indicated that they want to see, I don't think that that decision is going to be made in favor of works by people of color.
Trying to please the audience with things they want to see. There's the rub. And it's not just a rub in terms of race. This almost commercial urge to produce box office hits also riles another group chafing within the regional movement, the avant-garde.
To me, there's just no artistic integrity in pandering to your audience.
Jason Newlander, founder of the Salvage Vanguard Theater in Austin, Texas.
They need their subscribers. To challenge their audience would mean driving their subscribers away, which economically makes no sense. So they must pander to their audience. They have to produce safe work.
Newlander started forming his ideas in college in Providence, Rhode Island, just as director Oscar Eustace came to that city's big regional stage, Trinity Rep, and announced that he planned to present The Music Man.
And I was like, but you're the guy who originally did Angels in America. That's a, you know, it was a radical play when it was written. And he said, well, we have a lot of trust to build with my audience as a new artistic director there. And, you know, The Music Man just will help me build that trust. And then someday I'll be able to take those kinds of risks. To me, that just sounded soul-sucking.
Eustace did get to take some risks after a while, but Newlander wouldn't wait and hooked up with playwright Eric N., who was gathering folks who thought the regional movement had lost its way, in Iowa City for what they called a RAT conference, RAT as in Regional Alternative Theaters.
We're a group of like-minded theater artists committed to sharing work and ways of working, chiefly fueled by direct exchanges of goods and services without the mediation of money. We'd been trained to believe that money was the defining object and the defining obstacle of doing or making anything. We refused to let that be the case.
So, okay, what kind of theater art do the rats like? And now the incoming dean of the theater school at CalArts is enthusiastic about performance artist Ruth Margraf, who
looks like Shirley Temple, sounds like Marilyn Monroe, and has the mentality of Thomas Merton eating alive William S. Burroughs.
What hurts, honey? And I point into my teeth, and you know those mining camp physicians, you point at the tooth and they pull it out. I barely had a tooth left in my...
She's got a savage imagination and this very sweet affect.
Margraf has appeared at Salvage Vanguard and fits the company's aim of offering challenging work to youthful patrons. About 60% of Jason Newlander's audience is younger than 35, a demographic most stages would kill for.
Theater companies are saying they're struggling to get young audiences in. We're doing it. And the way we do it is so easy. Make the work thematically relevant to a young audience and then put young artists up on the stage because people like to see themselves up on stage. I mean, it's like couldn't be a more simple formula.
Of course, it's simpler when you only have 93 seats to fill. But if your philosophy is that theater should be a way of engaging the world rather than a product, it makes sense, says Eric Ann.
Jeff Jones, an important playwright, says that theater should be constructed more like dinner parties, where you don't plan 6 months in advance and you don't advertise in the national media to get somebody to come to your house for dinner. They come to your house because you know them and because your house is a warm place and you make what they need at the time.
Radical as this emphasis on intimate engagement may sound, if you have thousands of subscribers, N knows that it echoes what early regional theater founders said when they rebelled against Broadway 6 decades ago. As experiments get institutionalized, he says, new experiments come along. N is often described as a visionary, so let's give him the last word in our American Stages series to describe the point of it all, that feeling that you get when theater really clicks.
You are in a place that's entirely certain and completely unknown. You feel like you have a word in your mouth, but when you open your mouth is empty. Secure expression of the unexpressible. That's when theater is really working. It's not so much about ideas or philosophy. It's not even so much about characters or story like rock and roll or a great swim meet or a good meal. It's evanescent, satisfying, and its perfections are inexpressible.
Playwright, educator, and theater theorist Eric N. I'm Bob Mondello.
Our entire American Stages series is at our website, npr.org.